Productive Coaching is a business that provides character-based materials and presentations for coaches, athletes, team leaders, parents, and businesses around the world. Good morning and welcome to our Proactive Coaching podcast series. Today our guest is Angus Reid. Angus Reid is from Canada, lives not very far from where we do on Kamano Island. He was a Canadian Football League for 13 years. He was the fourth overall pick in 2001 and had all 13 years with the BC Lions. During that time, they won two Grey Cups. Now Angus is an author and he's a speaker. If you haven't seen his TED Talk, seen and listened to his TED Talk on why we need high school football, I would highly recommend that. I received a copy of his book about a month or so ago from a mutual friend, and I got right into it. I'm a reader, but I got right into it, and really the name of the book is called Thank You, Coach, and it's Learning How to Live by Being Taught How to Play. That's the subtitle of it. It's a story, actually, for me, of the lasting impact a coach's significance can have on the life of a player. When I first started into it, it was entertaining and it was humorous, but the more I got into it, the more I really realized the value of the application that he provides for coaches. It's organizational and motivational teaching strategies. It's really how the coach operates as a great mentor. I'm going to not only recommend this to every coach I know, but we're going to also add it to our list of books that we have recommending for our coaching library for those athletic directors and coaches who build coaching libraries. This needs to be there. So welcome, Angus. We're really, really thankful you're willing to join us and looking forward to talking to you.
No, thanks for having me on, Bruce. It's a real honor.
So overall, what is the purpose of your book, Thank You, Coach?
Well, it sort of changed as I got into it. The initial point for me was to, on a personal level, thank my coach. I mean, he spent years writing me along with all the other athletes, personal notes of gratitude towards the effort we gave him, and I wanted to remind him, or show him, shall I say, the impact he had on me, and thank him, and by extension, thank all coaches for what they do to change not only athletes, but change people. And in that vein, remind all coaches of the great impact you have, or the great responsibility you have, to be able to positively impact people's lives through coaching them sports.
You know, as I got into the book, one of the things that really struck me right away was your identification of two of what you consider the most important characteristics of greatness. Would you mind expanding on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure, Bruce. And a little preface for people. I was kind of an undersized player, and we all know pro sports is usually reserved for the greatest athletes out there, and I would not put myself in the world of the greatest athletes out there. I was pretty good, and I was one of those guys that was good enough to kind of just sneak in, but, you know, right from the get-go, I knew that it was going to be an uphill battle for me to make it and then sustain a career at this level. And when I first met my coach, Coach Dan, you know, he asked me a question right off the bat that I think is maybe the most important question a coach can ask a player, and a player can ask themselves, or anybody can really ask themselves, and that was simply, how good do you want to be? And it was a powerful question because he wasn't telling me how good I had to be. He wasn't telling me how good he thinks I should be. He was just asking me, how good do I want to be? And it's a powerful question because anyone can answer that, but the dangerous reason I think the reason why most people don't ask is because once you answer that question, Bruce, you're accountable now to it. Now your actions better line up with your answer. So I think a lot of people don't go there. And he asked me, and I told him I want to be as good as possible, or whatever nonsense I rambled back to him, and he let me know right then. And it's a phrase that's not in the book, and it's a phrase that's been popularized by other coaches. But he told this to me way back in 2003 that talent sets the floor, character sets the ceiling. I know that's a phrase many people have heard since, but I had never heard it before. And what he was reminding me was that I had enough talent to be there. More talent wasn't going to make the difference. What was going to make the difference was character. And the way he explained character to me was in one word. It was commitment. It was the ability to commit to what you want to become and everything that involves. You know, not just the stuff you like to do, not just the fun stuff, but everything. And the ability to really commit to doing that consistently every day is character, and that's what's going to dictate how far you go. And within that phrase, he had told me, and I outlined this in the book, that there was two defining characteristics of anyone that achieves greatness at any level, in the world, really, in anything you do. And they were consistent across all platforms. That was durability and dependability. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And, you know, I think most of us think in the sport of football, or most athletic endeavors, but particularly in a contact sport, we think durability is kind of having that, being blessed genetically with a body that can put up with a lot of punishment. You know, certain people, for whatever reason, body can handle more than others, and that's sometimes just what you've been given in life. But he was speaking more on the mental aspect of being mentally durable, and that was to always show up, no matter what. To always stick to the process, no matter what. To not let distractions pull you away from what you've committed to. And it was being durably tough enough or durably committed enough to, once you decide what you're going to do and what it takes, you always do it. You always show up. You're always there. You keep coming back no matter what. And that was a decision. That's a choice that anyone gets to make. And that comes back to your commitment. It comes back to your character. And that has nothing to do with talent. You know, as we all know, talent gets lazy. Talent can get tired. Talent can quit. Talent cannot, you know, decide to do other things today. But commitment and character is mentally durable. You are always there. And you look at the great players that you played with or that you coach or friends in your life, they're probably mentally durable. They're the ones that are always there. They're the ones that don't let external circumstances dictate what they will, you know, will they show up or not. They show up. They always keep coming back. They don't get easily distracted. They're committed to what matters most. And that's how you put careers together. And I found out later, that's how you build a marriage. That's how you build a career in anything you do. And the next one was dependability. And again, I was kind of unsure what he meant by that. But, you know, Bruce, I think we can all attest, and now all your listeners can think of people that they've worked with that, they've never missed a day of work in their life. They've always showed up. But not everyone has done a day of work in their life. You know, there's people that have always been there, but what did they bring when they showed up? They just always showed up. That's good. But dependability, as it was explained to me from my coach, was bringing your very best to what you're doing every single time. And again, that's a choice. And my very best would be different from your very best, but from a coaching perspective, his job was to know what I could do and what I couldn't do, and never put me in position to expect me to do something that he knew I couldn't. But to be a dependable player was to do my very best of what I could do every single time. That's a choice. That's a character trait. That's commitment. That has nothing to do with your ability or your talent that you've been blessed with. Those are decisions, and if you are mentally durable and dependable, and you have enough talent, more doesn't change that scenario. You know, I don't know any coach that wouldn't want you on their team. I don't know any teammate that wouldn't want to play with you, and I wouldn't know anybody outside of sports for the rest of your life that wouldn't want you to be a part of their life, because they can rely on you to always be there. And they know exactly what you're going to bring every single time. And I think all coaches would agree, it becomes very easy to strategize a game plan when you know who's going to show up and you know exactly what they're going to bring, and you can hang your hat on that. The rest is up to you to just, you know, tweak your attack plans appropriately based on that knowledge. But when you have a team full of star-studded talent, but you're never sure if they're going to show up today mentally or physically, and you're never 100% sure of, are they going to bring their best today or not? That can be very difficult as a coach to consistently, you know, have confidence in your game plan. And it can be very hard for a player to build a consistent career when they're not consistent with their effort and their attitude because of their commitment levels. And you know what? I learned it. I applied that because that was in my control. I built a career of 13 years playing pro football at a brutal position at center, being undersized, the smallest at my position in the whole league, my whole time there, and I stuck to my guns of just never being distracted, always showing up no matter what, and always bringing my best. And I learned that that's good enough. And good enough can get you to amazing places if you bring that every single time.
Great stuff. Our guest is Angus Reid. His book is Thank You, Coach, Learning How to Live by Being Taught How to Play. Coach, you talk about trust in your book a lot. And so how does a coach earn trust?
Well, I think it's almost the flip side of what he told me. It's the same thing from a coaching perspective. If a coach is always there and they always bring your best, that's one way to do it. But I think there's so many levels and layers to this. It's been crystal clear from the get-go. Well, let me back up a little bit and tell the story from Dan, how he built trust with me. Was our initial meeting, and this is pro sports, so, you know, as you can imagine, it can be kind of a cold business where it's you, producer, you go, and what we care about is can you help the team win? That's kind of sometimes it. My first meeting with my coach had nothing to do with football, where a lot of times your first meeting is at the office, they outline how they operate, this is the expectations of you, and, you know, you go to work. My first meeting with my coach was offsite at a restaurant, casual environment, and he spent that whole hour or 2 hours or whatever it was giving me the floor to speak with probing questions about getting to know who I was as a person. And he started our relationship based on wanting to know who I was, what mattered to me, what makes me tick, what gets me excited, so he could learn my value system, so he could begin our relationship getting to know me as a person. And then from that moment on, he could coach me with the understanding of who I was as a human, first, and second, what he needed to do with me as an athlete. And that was something new to me, particularly as you move up in the ranks of sports, where to care about the person before the athlete gets rarer and rarer the higher level you go in sports. And that's how Dan started our relationship, which really was a difference maker in terms of where we went from there, because obviously the demands of pushing me to limits and scrutinizing my techniques and always honing me to improve can get pretty ruthless, but he built our foundation on the premise that our relationship was based on two people that he cared about me and I learned to care about him, and that's why we're able to push each other to get so much better. Where a lot of coaches, I think, skip that step and think, you know, your job is to come and do your job, period, and that might be true, but if you don't link it first on a human level where there's true care and learning about who that person is, you know, you've missed a golden opportunity to connect with a person, and you've kept the relationship critical, which is okay, but when times get tough and things get hard, if nothing's deeper than that, that's where things can fall apart very easy. So he was great at getting to know me. From that moment on, what he did, and this was something I learned from him, he made the standards and expectations crystal clear. So there was no vagueness in terms of expectations of us as a player and what a good performance meant and what a winning block meant. And it was very clear. His thoughts were team standards always have to be objective, so they're the same for everybody. It wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to let me get away with a lower standard than someone else. Standards were objective. But because he took the time to get to know each person individually as they came in, his coaching was subjective to the player. He always got to know each player so he could meet them where they were instead of demanding each player to come to where he was, so he could pull you along and make sure everybody got to that same objective standard. So he coached us all individually, and it's at the professional level. He on two levels. You know, my arms were short, not long, where another guy's arms were long, not short, so there was technically different ways to get the block done. And emotionally and psychologically, he knew how to reach each person, how we would respond. Some people needed lots of detail. Some people didn't want a lot of detail. Some people needed a heavy hand. Some people needed a soft hand. And he knew that because he cared enough to get to know each person so he could make sure he was getting through to us as best as possible so he could help us become the best player possible and not leave the burden on us to come to him. He came to each player and brought us along, which, you know, to me, built massive levels of trust because he would take the time to care about us, and the care was consistent through all his messaging, and, you know, and he held us accountable, and he demanded that we held him accountable to the standards that was always outlined. We always had open communication, open dialogue, honesty was paramount in our relationship, and the nice thing was it was always consistent. He wasn't different. He wasn't a different person week to week. That was my, you know, I had him for 11 of my 13 years, which is probably longer than most people ever have a coach. And that was one reason why I could write this book, the depth of our relationship for 11 years. And I can say he was the same person the first meeting to the last meeting I ever had with him. Nothing ever changed, which to me is the easiest way to build trust, because I learned this a long time ago. You can't always trust what someone says. You can't always trust what someone does. But you can always trust patterns, and it's the consistency of how you interact with someone that builds that trust. And Dan was consistent with his messaging, with his standards, with his way of coaching, and so every day he was the same person, and that enabled us to trust him, which enabled me to buy into any coaching philosophies, any strategy changes, because I always knew he had my best interests at heart. And he always did, because of the consistency of the way he went about his interactions.
You know, Angus, we have a booklet entitled The Impact of Trust, where I have outlined what I thought allowed, and this in most cases, high school and college coaches to be trusted by their athletes. And the three areas that we talk about that allows you to be trusted are, number one, your competence, your ability to teach, your ability to coach. The second thing is your personal care. And the third one is your personal character. And in your description of why you had built this level of trust with your coach, I think you hit all three perfectly. It's never an accident. Trust is never an accident. It's an intentional strategy and style that coaches have. Have you ever had any coaches in your history that you didn't trust? And if so, why?
Yeah, absolutely. What's really funny about this whole story is I met Dan my third year pro. That was when we had a full coaching staff change, and he came with the new regime. And the previous two seasons were like a whirlwind for me, and I got drafted. You know, it shows that I was with the Lions for 13 years, which is true, but I was actually drafted by the Toronto Argonauts in the first round, and I was cut in training camp. Now, Bruce, you'd have to look this up, but I might be the only pro athlete in major sports history to be a first-round draft pick, a number one draft pick of a team, that got cut in training camp. Not traded, not held on the developmental squad, cut. So you can imagine the emotional roller coaster of being a first-round pick to being released and never playing it down. I bounced my way over to the Montreal Alouettes, spent 15 weeks on their practice roster, so now I'm never thinking I'm going to crack a lineup. And then I get called in to say I'm being shipped back and traded to the BC Lions, my hometown team, where I sat on the practice roster for the final 3 weeks of that season. So my first year pro, I was on three teams. I'd never played it down, left wondering, will I ever make it in this league? And my second year with the BC Lions, I'm trying to make the team, and we had a new offensive line coach that came in, and he was very very old school in mentality, kind of a bully, kind of wanted to impress the veteran players by picking on the young players, and kind of one of those, you know, this is what it takes to get through the grind, and kind of almost an initiation process of using the younger players for the benefit of beratement and belittlement. And I walked out. I didn't want to take it anymore. I didn't want to take personal insults and feeling horrible about myself as a human, let alone struggling as a player at the same level. And I remember I walked out of camp and I told my parents, I don't need this in my life. Like, life is hard enough. I don't need to also have to sit there and take personal insults every day. So I actually quit. And, you know, for about 3 days in camp, and I was really lucky that my family, my agent, and then some of the other coaches on the team, we talked it out, and I came back to football realizing my dreams are more important than my daily problems, doing to do with other people. And I made sure that my why was bigger than the issues, and I got back to work. But that left a hard taste in my mouth of, okay, this is what pro sport is. This is I'm going to have to really get a tough skin and go inward and not look for other people for help here, which was hard. And I got through that season as a backup, and then the following year, Dan came into my life and flipped everything back on its head again, realizing there are great coaches and leaders out there, and there are people that care, and what a difference that makes. So it's funny, I went from one side of the coin to the other within a year, and I experienced what I thought was the worst of being a player, coach, or the worst kind of relationship of a player coach to what I know now is the best, right one after each other. So it was interesting for me to kind of be down that low mentally, to be turned around to realizing how good things can be and should be, within say a 12-month span.
You know, there are so many, as I've read through your book, I'm one of those people that turns over the corners of pages when I want to come back. I write in the margins. I make notes to myself when I want to come back. And very honestly, your book is about now twice as thick as it originally was when it came to me. So there are so many great concepts for coaches in your book. Are there any other ones that you think would be good to focus on here as we start to conclude?
Well, I think outside of building the initial trust of actually getting to know your players on a personal level, I think that's huge, and I think it's so powerful. And people think that, you know, that's hard to do. Well, you got to remember, Dan did this at the professional level, and we would cycle through players sometimes, you know, every week there'd be a new guy, and he would still take the time because he knew what mattered most was connecting with the person before you could coach the player. But I think beyond that is absolute clarity of standards and expectations. I think too often they're not clear on the front end of how what's expected here and how we're going to go about it. And then without clarity, some people try to hold you accountable to standards that weren't made very clear, that weren't reinforced often, and then and clarifying exactly how we're going to ensure everybody can get there. And those have to be really clear because it gives confidence of what I'm here to do, what it really means to get there, and what it's going to take, so they can commit to knowing. It's tough to ask a player to commit to vague concepts that are sort of mentioned here and there. And then I think it's the consistent reinforcement of both why you're here, what we're here to do, and the reinforcement of how good you're doing. You know, Dan, I had a whole chapter on the letters. And, you know, this is pro sports, but Dan would write an individual handwritten letter to each of his offensive linemen every game day. Every single game day, we'd get a letter that was just for us. And it would remind us of little things we did that week during practice that are another example of why we're doing great, why we matter, why we're the right person for this job. And they'd be things that were small, things I didn't even realize he did during a drill or during meetings where he noticed a question or a comment or observation I'd made that reminds him or reinforced him why I'm the guy for the job. And it was little phrasing that left you without a shadow of a doubt knowing that your coach cared about you, he believed in you, and he wouldn't want anyone else on the field other than you. And, you know, you're talking 25 to 35-year-old professional athletes where this is your job, where a lot of people say you shouldn't need that. And maybe you shouldn't, but boy, does it help. I could imagine the impact on a 15-year-old where you know, there's insecurities in life and you're trying to fit in and you're trying to know, who am I and am I good enough? And you know, does the coach like me or not? Well, you know what, for a coach, little messaging on a personal level, little nudges and reminders that not only do I care about you, but I'm behind you 100% of the way. And make that real by giving them little evidence of things they've done that you've noticed that aren't maybe not grandiose things, just little things. It's like, wow, he's watching me. Oh, he took note of that? I didn't even know I did that. That goes a long, long way. And I tell Bruce, I tell people, I've been a longtime pro. I don't have a ton of mementos from my career anymore. I gave away most of my jerseys and helmets. But those letters, I have every single one of them. You know, that's over 200 letters I have at home because, you know, at the end of the day, coaching can help you play your sport better. But what it did for me was remind me that I always had somebody that cared about me and was there for me, and that transcends sports. That's a powerful thing that people may say you shouldn't need in life, but wow, does it make a difference to know someone you look up to, someone you respect, and someone that you listen to as an expert in what they're doing to help you get better, reminds you how much they care about you, how much they believe in you, and how much they have your back. That goes well beyond the sporting field, and it's a reminder for the rest of your life that you're important, that you matter, that you can do something good, and that you are a unique individual that brings something different to the world, and that is needed. I think those are powerful things that can carry a young athlete, through the game on to when life gets hard outside of the field, as we always know will, and they can have that reminder that, of course, they can do it, and someone that you respect to look up to really believes in you.
You know, again, great thoughts, and there's so many in the book. The letters thing really hit me hard, just because I have done that, but I also still have letters from some of my coaches who, it is true. It's what I call your treasure chest. You keep yep. those things there forever. Any final thoughts? We're really honored to reach a lot of coaches, and not just in the United States, but in Canada and all over the world. Any other final thoughts for coaches, whether they're experienced coaches or beginning coaches?
Well, I just want to take the moment to thank them. Thank you all for what you do. I think it's maybe the most honorable thing anyone can do with their time is to help mold our youth and arm them with the belief that they can, and then give them the tools to help them see it for real. So a huge thank you. And I think the one, not a warning, but a reminder, as we move through the process of sports evolving continuously, it seems like we keep getting higher and higher in terms of the technical way to play sports and the schemes, and everything is moving so much further down the rabbit hole that we need to make sure that we don't lose focus and perspective of what really matters here. And sure, we want to win games, and sure, we want our athletes to become as good as they possibly can at playing a sport, but not at the expense of forgetting that we are working with young people and preparing them for life. And so my big challenge or reminder to coaches is everything that you are teaching them to improve their sport, make sure that you realize or that you see that your teaching can transcend when it's done. Because if it doesn't transcend after playing, it's kind of useless. If all we're doing is just winning games and not teaching something they can take with them, you've lost a golden opportunity. And I remind coaches all the time, you might be the last people in the entire world that can get a teenager's undivided attention for 2 hours. It might be the last place in the world where they don't think to look at their phone or look on the social media feed, because they are focused on a sport that demands their ultimate attention. That is a rare privilege in this world now, to have a teenager's undivided attention. Their parents don't get it, their girlfriend or boyfriend doesn't get it, a movie doesn't get it, but you do. So as my mom told me a long time ago, if you're ever in a position where people will listen to you, make sure you say something that matters. So you have a platform where you have our youth undivided attention. Teach them something that's going to matter. Teach them something that they can take with them and use for the rest of their life to be better people.
Angus, when we post this podcast, I'd like to ask your permission to also supply your contact information so people who want to bring you in as a speaker can do that. Would that be okay?
Yeah, no, 100%. That would be great, Bruce. I love meeting new people and anything I can ever do to help.
You know, you're an example of just talking to you this time and one other time, just an example of why when I coach football, I always chose to coach offensive linemen. I love those guys and they know it. So anyway, Angus, we want to thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your wisdom and the clarity of your book. And thank you for the lives that you're going to continue to impact as a speaker. This has been a true blessing for us to have you be available for all of our coaches.